I have a story about something that happened in my life that I feel like kind of turned me around in the winds and blew me along a different path. And so this is about resistance and about strong tips. And the name of this story is called Imagine No Borders. And back in January 2016, I was living at the Upaya Zen Center in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And it was coming to the end of my 6 month stay there. And we were in the middle of our practice period at Upaya. And to be honest, at that point, you know, I was kind of taking it all for granted a little bit. I think I was really sort of only half there. I had dissatisfactions and distractions. And I was thinking ahead and getting ready to leave. And with a month left, all of a sudden I got this message that my really dear friend, Robin Wheeler, was dying in Vancouver. And that she was in the last stages of pancreatic cancer, and it could be my last chance probably to see her lucid. So quickly, I booked a cheap plane ticket, and the ticket was to Seattle round trip. And so I jumped on the plane, and I went to Seattle, and I got on a bus, and the bus went to Vancouver. And I checked in with my friend Terry, and I blew up his air mattress to sleep on his floor, and I was there in Vancouver to spend time with Robin. And so I had 5 days, and every morning I'd bite to BGH, and I sat down in the waiting room, and I waited and waited, and then finally somebody, a nurse, would come out and tell me, "I'm sorry, Robin's not taking any more visitors today. She's just a cancer invited today." So I get on my bike, and I go back to Terry's house, and the next morning I go back to the hospital, and finally, on the last day of my time in Vancouver, I was able to meet Robin. And I went in, and she was so thin and small, but funny and lovely. And I got to see her and hold her hand and tell her about the lizards in the desert. And it was the last time I ever saw Robin alive. And so the next morning, it's time for me to get on my plane. And I was pretty worn thin and thinking about Robin. And I got on the bus to go across the border to go to Seattle to catch my plane back. And I remember I was wearing a fuzzy blue kitty hat, and I'm sure my eyes were really blurry, and I was just not entirely there. I was sad. And the bus pulled into the Peace Arch border crossing. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll be the first off the bus, so I'll be the first back on the bus, and as soon as I get to Seattle, I'm going to have breakfast, and, you know, I was there. So I filed off the bus, and I go up to the border gate, and there's the officer of Homeland Security, and, you know, I've done this a million times, the officer of Homeland Security, and he looked at me and said, "And why are you going to Santa Fe, New Mexico?" And I said, "Oh, well, I'm staying at the Upaya Zen Center. I'm just on my way back to finish my time." And he said, "And what are you doing there?" And I said, "Well," he said, "Are you working?" And I was like, "Oh, no, I'm not working. I'm a volunteer." He said, "I see." "And where do you sleep?" "Well, I sleep at the Zen Center." "And they feed you there?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he says, "Well, that's considered pay for work, so, and you're not allowed to do that, so you're going back." I tried to protest and said, "Shut up." And I said, "Yeah, but," and he said, "if you make me mad, I'm going to bar you from the state for 5 years. You're not going anywhere. So follow me. We're going back to the street." And he took me and put me in the waiting room, and there was nothing. And I said, "Yeah," but he's like, "Did I tell you shut up? Shut up." I sat there in that waiting room. And I watched my breath going in and out, and my body was shaking all over. It was like a rug had literally just been pulled over under my feet. I couldn't balance. And to stop my body from shaking, I started knitting, and I was knitting a pair of soft charcoal gray mittens for Roshi Joan Halifax. And I sat there for 4 hours in this room watching the cars line up at the border, like looking out at the border gates as the cars went through to go to America. And finally, after 4 hours, a Greyhound arrived coming the other way, and I got on the bus, and I headed back to Vancouver. And I was done. And I went back to Terry's place, and I still had the key, and I went in, and I blew up the mattress, and I sat there, and I emailed Roshi. And I said, Roshi, what should I do? What should I do? I'm flagged now. Like, and I blew up. I try again, they can find me, they can ban me, they can arrest me. Everyone I talk to says, don't try it. I want to come back to Apaya, but what should I do? And Roshi said, well, I don't know, I'll send you a letter. Can you talk to immigration? And I said, well, I'll try. And she said, well, if it's really dangerous, maybe you should just accept and just stay there. Maybe come back in a couple of years. You know, just accepted. I said, yeah, maybe, I guess. But she said, and this was actually by email, and Senator was on the phone, and I could see her, Roshi's eyes, and she said, but you know, we like a little determination. And I know this, I know what Roshi says. She says, keep a strong back and a soft front. And when Roshi says we, when she applies the royal we, she's kind of referring to the bigger picture. We like a little determination. So, okay, I got that. And I went to bed. I stayed up all night. My mind was spinning. How am I going to get back to Upaya? You know, I'm fantasizing. Taking a bus, taking a train, stuffing myself in the trunk of somebody's car. Oh, my God, how? I don't know. I get up in the morning, and so it's the next day, and my pal, Obi-9, and I, we get on our bike, and we ride all over the town, all over Vancouver, trying to find a U.S. immigration office. You know, there's got to be a Homeland Security guy, somewhere I can talk to this guy, person. We go to the train station, we go to the government offices, and no luck anywhere. It's like, no one will talk to me. This invisible wall, and there's no one I can see. So, what can I do? Eat some donuts, drink some coffee. I'm going to the airport. That's what I mean. So I go to the airport, get on the Skytrain, go to the airport. I figure, right, there's got to be somebody there. There's got to be an office at the border, right? So I get to the airport, and there's no immigration office at the airport either. It's at Vancouver Airport. The airport is the office is on the other side of the glass wall, and the only way to get an audience with immigration is to buy a plane ticket and to try to get on a plane. This is the only way. Okay. Now, a plane ticket for tomorrow is going to cost me thousands of dollars, and the thought of wasting that money is scary, and the thought of getting arrested is also scary, so I don't know what to do. And I sit down at this plastic table in the concourse, and I just close my eyes, and I just breathe. I can feel my heart beating so hard right now. I remember, what am I going to do? And I looked up. I looked across the concourse, and there was the Air Canada, which is Canada, Air Canada. And I got up, and I walked across the concourse, and I went to the ticket counter. It was like about 15 minutes before it closed, too. And there was a beautiful, matriarchal-looking South Asian woman standing at this ticket counter, and she had a tag, her name was Melinda. And I told her my story, my sad story, and she said, "Oh, they can do some." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you think I should try it?" And she said, "It is worth it." And so she found me a plane ticket to Albuquerque the next morning, $600. Okay, fine. So I bought the ticket, and because it was so last minute, paper ticket, remember those paper tickets? And I looked at the ticket, and she had actually written on this ticket So it's typed onto the ticket that if I am denied entry, the ticket will be fully refunded. Okay? Good luck, she said. So, I vow, remember this, one kind word, one glance of encouragement can change a person's life so much. So, I went back to Terry's apartment. I blew up I re-ensconced myself on the crappy air mattress on the floor, and I tried to go to sleep, but I couldn't sleep. My mind going around and around, and then I had this thought. This is it. This is the strategy. This is the only thing I can do. I can proceed with radical honesty and absolute respect. And I will not have any adversaries. I will meet every single person will be my ally. Everyone will try to help me. And I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to stand in my integrity. And I'm not going to outweigh it. It's not possible. It's not possible. But Roshi, you want a little determination? Okay. Here we go. So I got up, pulled the plug out of the mattress, I jumped up and down on it, got all the air out, and I took the first sky train of the day to YVR. And I walked into YVR, and I looked up at the clock, and it was about 6:03 a.m., which would be 7 o'clock in Santa Fe. And so I stood there and waited until the clock struck 6. Through pious time, 3 bells, ding, 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 morning buzzin. The Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, the deep breath, and I walked into the 6:31. And I faced a long row of security booths. And in every booth, I swear, there was like a big, beefy guy with a military haircut. And I looked at the row, I looked up and down, and I thought, okay, you're good people, you're going to help me. You're going to help me. Who's going to help me? And the person said, please step to that booth. And in that booth, there was a young, red-haired guy, thin. And I stood in front of him with my passport, and I kept very carefully on the cannabis side of the line. And I didn't step over that line. And I said, I want you to know this. I was here 2 days ago. I was denied at the border, and it was a misunderstanding. And I have this letter to prove it. This is the truth. I'm not trying to scam you. I probably had never heard anyone say that before. But he reached over the invisible border, and he took the passport, and he took the letter from Roshi Joan in his hand. And he read the letter very carefully, and I was still behind the line. I didn't want it to transgress. And then he said, follow me. And I stepped over the line into America. And I followed him into the waiting room of the immigration people, Homeland Security, the back room. And so there were a couple of dozen detainees in various states of distress in that room. If any of you have ever been there, you know that room. And everybody sitting in uncomfortable, slippery chairs, plastic chairs, and with a cordon of desks. And then behind that, there was a glass partition. And a little child starts to whine and then starts to cry, and I could see the man who had my papers looking at the baby's mother, and he was irritated, and I was just facing inward, trying to direct trust and respect to every officer, hush little baby, hush little baby, and I was trying to breathe the spaciousness and the calm of the dendo into the airless wing. And whenever I started feeling this rise of antagonism, like, what are they trying to do to me? Same kind of rise in me, I stopped it. And I go, no, you're here to help me, aren't you? I know you guys are doing your best. You're doing your best. I know you're trying to help me get back home. And finally, I was directed to a third officer. And this was a woman with a ponytail. She was no taller than me. Not very tall. And her name tag said Bishop on it, and she seemed very tense. Like, I got the feeling like she was new to the job. She was young, and she said, okay. So you're going where? And what is, and she said, what's your role there? And I was determined to be absolutely truthful, and I said to her, well, we study Buddhist teachings, we sit, we stare at a wall, we walk very slowly, you know, we garden. She's like, okay. What are Upaya's expectations of you? And I thought about it and said, well, their only expectation really is that I devote myself to that. She's like, okay, fine. And she looked on the website and she said, residents of the Path of Service are expected to work 30 hours a week. And then I thought it was sick, right? And she said, so I explained to her, well, you know, this is called work practice and it's Samu and it's part of our mindfulness training. And that's why we do this work. And she kind of narrowed her eyes in. And she said, what are you going to get from this program? Are you going to get a certificate, some accreditation? What are you going to get out of it? And I said, no certificate. Just hopefully some learning that I can bring forward into the room and into the world and try to be of service to the world. And she said, okay. So she goes back behind the glass, she confers with everybody for a while back there, makes some phone calls, she comes back out. And now, okay, everything's changed. Now I'm expected to show, she says, we need to talk about your ties and equity. And that's the first time that I've heard this phrase. Ties and equities are what we need to prove that I will not stay in America, that I will come back to Canada. But I have no family in Vancouver. I have no property. I have no job to return to. I have no fixed address. Imagine no possessions. Ties and equities. It's not a big theme in the month of July. So I'm sent back to the waiting area, and she consults, goes back behind the glass, and she consults with the officer. She makes phone calls, she calls people, and she comes back to me with more questions. This goes on for 2.5 hours or so, and while she's basically there's a full life on me, but I'm going, keep at it, Bishop. Go at it, Ms. Bishop. You can do it. I know you can do it. Keep going. You're working for me. Keep going. And then, sitting. And I look, and finally, okay, 30 minutes left of my plane departure time. And she calls me up. And she sighs deeply. And she says through her teeth, okay. For purpose of visit, I am putting self-improvement steps. And I'm going like, there's really not any self to improve. No, don't go there. I didn't go there. And then she writes, February 15th on a slip of paper, and she staples it to my passport. She tells me to present the paper when I come back to Canada. No later than that date, she shoves the passport and the boarding pass across the desk at me. And I take them, and I bow, and I thank her, and I say, oh, thank you so much. If you like, hey, do you like to dance? Because, you know, this show I'm putting on in April, Crazy 8th. She says, thank you. No, get out. And I'm like, thanks, Bishop, thanks. Thank you, Homeland Security. Thank you. I take everything, and I grab the papers. I sprint like mad through the terminal, through the corridors, the farthest, no kidding, I swear, the farthest frickin' departure gate on the edge of the known universe, and on the last aboard, and I run across the tarmac, and up the stairs, and onto a dash 8 painted with red maple leaf, and I fly to Portland, and to San Francisco, and to Albuquerque, and to Santa Fe. I fly home. Imagine, no borders. So I'm back at Upaya in the New Mexico desert, and the sky is so, so huge, and the dust is red, and there's magpies, and there's this sparkling volcanic sand, and every single grain of sand is like a mountain, and every grain is a freaking miracle, and I am taking absolutely nothing.